VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us on Crosstalk here on VCY America. And ladies and gentlemen, our topic today might be fearful to some, but I want to remind you from the very outset that God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. I mean, our purpose today is not to create fear, but it is to inform. I mean, to be understanding of the times in which we live. We have to know what is going on around us. But we're going to be speaking about this matter of food inflation and food shortages and food crises. And is this propelling us to famine? I mean, we see the fires that are going on at food processing plants. Daily, the news is telling us about the shortage in baby formulas taking place. Farmers are being paid not to plant their fields. The war on beef has been addressed here by Tom DeWeese, and the list goes on and on and on. I also want to remind you of God's promises to us to remind us in such times, like we have from Matthew chapter 6, starting at verse 25. And that is to take no thought for your life, what ye shall eat or what ye shall drink, nor yet for your body, what ye shall put on. Is not the life more than meat, and the body than raiment? Behold, the fowls of the air, for they sow not, neither do they reap, nor gather into barns, yet your heavenly Father feedeth them. Are ye not much better than they? Therefore take no thought, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or wherewithal shall we be clothed? For after all these things do the Gentiles seek, for your heavenly Father knoweth that ye have need of all these things. But seek ye first the kingdom of God, and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. And friends, we recognize that it is God who supplies our needs, and God is the one who cares for us. And at the same time, we go to Proverbs, and we're told this, go to the ant, thou sluggard. Consider her ways, and be wise, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provideth her meat in the summer, and gathereth her food in the harvest. So as we affirm God is the one who supplies our needs, we're also told to observe the ant, who is diligent, and who also prepares. So with all that in mind, we're going to delve into this topic today, and we're still trying to get a hold of our guest, William F. Jasper, who has written on this and scheduled to be with us here this afternoon on Crosstalk, as this is a very critical issue that is hitting the nation at this time. As a matter of fact, as Tom DeWeese tells us at the American Policy Center, that President Biden announced food shortages, and that seems to make it happen. March 24th, 2022. After the G7 meeting in Brussels, Biden announced that the food shortages around the world would be real, of course, because of the Ukraine war, which he so desperately wanted, and those dastardly Russians. Now he is making it happen. In the last 5 months, 20 food and fertilizer plants and storage facilities across the United States destroyed by fire. The overt destruction of America is underway, he says. Our food supply is the primary weapon of the enemy. Our own government, no bombers required. Tom DeWeese says to stay alert, America. We are at war with our own government, and it was declared at them. Interesting information indeed. I'm looking at a story from Breitbart right now, some very important information. The prices of U.S. farm products continue to rise in March, reflecting the inflationary pressures gripping the U.S. economy and fears that the war in Ukraine and sanctions in Russia could lead to food shortages around the globe. The Department of Agriculture said that its index of prices received by U.S. farmers increased 6.3% from February and 31% from March of 2021. The index tracks pieces paid by initial buyers from U.S. farms, the first step of the food production chain in the United States. Crop prices on the rise. Livestock prices also on the rise. Joining us here today on this topic, we do welcome William F. Jasper, senior editor at the New American magazine. He is the author, journalist, and commentator, as well as a top investigative reporter and documentary producer. For more than three decades, he has served as an accredited correspondent at the United Nations, New York, and UN summits around the world. And with us today here on Crosstalk, Bill, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Well, Bill, we are a land of plenty, and thoughts of famine doesn't even seem to cross the minds of people here in the United States, and yet we see nations around the world that are suffering from the devastation of famine, and we see what's going on right now. Our food prices are escalating, the scarcity of some products. Are we headed down this path here in the United States of famine?
Well, as strange as that may seem, that is a real possibility, and that was the purpose of my article. In fact, we have several articles we're putting together in our next print issue of the New American Magazine. Already online, we've had a number of articles, and actually going back several years, pointing toward the vulnerabilities in our food chain and in our food security production. And so, yes, we are facing a real possibility of that. And in my article, which we published last week on food famine or food shortages, food inflation, food scarcity, and then famine question mark, we go through over a dozen different issues that are all coming together now in a seemingly perfect storm to potentially bring famine not only to where they're already experiencing it in third world countries, but increasingly, alarmingly, looks like in the developed world and even in the United States.
Well, you indicate in this article that the blame for much of the human desolation of famine can be laid squarely on the shoulders of the World Health Organization. What's your basis for writing that?
Well, first of all, if we look at the COVID lockdowns and mandates that came out in 2020, with the Wuhan flu, the CCP flu, or whatever one wants to call it, with COVID-19, we saw unprecedented all over the world, first time in history, where we have had quarantines, lockdowns, very stringent communist-style mandates and controls on the whole economy. And this, as we pointed out, and not only us, but even many people who are on the inside of the World Health Organization and the UN Food and Agricultural Organization pointed out that this was going to cause famine all over the world, particularly for the most vulnerable populations, the most vulnerable countries, and that more people would die from the so-called cure, from the lockdowns and mandates, than from the flu itself. And that has borne out. So the World Health Organization and all of its national corresponding organizations here in the United States, the CDC and the NIH, began implementing, as did all these other health so-called authorities all over the world, began putting into place these lockdowns. And what did that do? That interrupted, it stopped, it disrupted the planting cycle, the harvesting cycle, the transportation of food stuffs, fertilizer, fuel to all of these areas. And so I quote in there from June or July of 2020, when David Beasley of the World Food Program and the UN Food and Agricultural Organization pointed out, he said, we are going to, as a result of these lockdowns, see famine of biblical proportions. And he said that many more people will die from the results of these so-called cures, the responses by political authorities, than from the virus itself.
Right.
And that has been happening all over the world. And now it has reached the developed countries, mm-hmm. where we are seeing that these World Health Organization, CDC, NIH mandates and lockdowns are now compounded by the Russia-Ukraine war, which has disrupted fuel deliveries all over the world, escalated the prices of those fuels, of fertilizers, which are fuel-intensive in creating, and the potash and other ingredients, the nitrogen, that are majority of which come from Russia and Ukraine.
And so, and by pulling all that together, I mean, as troubling as, I mean, we're seeing our price increases just escalate off the charts right now. But you write in your article, we ain't seen nothing yet. And what you're doing is you're pulling together these many things that are happening and saying, hey, we're in for quite a roller coaster right here.
Well, yes. And obviously there are things that could be done right now that should be done, that our political leaders should be doing, that would, if not totally mitigate this, would greatly reduce the calamitous impact of it. And particularly when it comes to energy, the Biden administration single-handedly crippled our energy all across the board, particularly with all of the fossil fuels, with coal, natural gas, oil, diesel, gasoline, all of those which are important, essential ingredients for our power grid, for our electricity, for our transportation, personal transportation, the transportation of everything that we use for feeding ourselves, clothing ourselves, for producing all of the materials, whether it's PVC pipe for construction or concrete, all of those things that we're now seeing shortages of, and all of that then impacts on the food chain and the delivery system. Yeah. So right now, when you put that together also with talk about a perfect storm, we've had the avian flu, the bird flu, which has now, thus far, close to 40 million chickens, turkeys, both meat birds and egg layers, have been destroyed because of the avian flu, which, again, is another flu out of China. And, again, we don't know exactly because the World Health Organization and the government of China have stonewalled and obstructed all investigations into these things. We don't know whether this is due to accident or is this actual economic and political warfare being waged against the United States.
Yeah, and with us on the avian flu topic, I mean, we have seen millions, as you pointed out, millions of chickens already destroyed, both the meat, chickens we use for meat, as well as egg laying. But they're predicting that there are going to be many millions more as this flu spreads across this country.
Yeah, so it's already in over 30 states. And they're saying not only, thus far, the biggest majority of those birds have been killed in these big farms, chicken farms, turkey farms, et cetera, where they have huge numbers all in one place. But they've also gone into small farms and even backyard flocks and destroyed them. And again, we don't know, particularly after what we have seen with the way in which testing and the statistical leisure domain that they've been using in terms of declaring a pandemic with regard to COVID, people are justifiably skeptical about many of these things, particularly claiming that we have to destroy all of these birds. There goes a whole bunch of our food chain, particularly the protein.
Yeah, we got a break right here. We'll be back in 1 minute. We're talking with William F. Jasper today. Yeah, he's written at it. You'll see his article and much more at thenewamerican.com. Thenewamerican.com. Back in a minute here on Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, popular creation speaker and author with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, now some people say that they don't believe in God because they can't see him. Is this a legitimate argument?
No, I don't think it is, Chris. Now, it does take faith to believe in God, but we see all sorts of evidence of him. We see the results of what he has done. We see many truths in the Bible verified by science and history and thus have a good reason to have faith in the rest. Chris, it amuses me to see so many people believing in aliens. We've never seen an alien. We've searched the heavens with fine detail and can find no clue that anything is out there. But they'll believe in aliens before they believe in God. Life is so complex that it must have been created. And that's the Back to Genesis truth.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Visit our web store at icr.org/store and use the promo code FACT at the checkout when ordering your That's a Fact DVD.
Listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Our guest today, William F. Jasper, senior editor at The New American Magazine. Again, their website, thenewamerican.com. And, Bill, you mentioned that your forthcoming issue of the magazine is going to be dealing with multiple articles on this issue.
Yeah, so we have, I think, a total now of seven articles on this, including, in my overall article, which we've already published. I'm doing an update of that that we published online. That will be in the print magazine as well. But we have a number of other articles that go in deeper into a couple of these things. Like, for instance, I mentioned briefly in my overview article the very mysterious fires that have broken out.
Let's talk about these because, just was it weekend before last, there were two more fires and even airplanes flying into these food processing places.
Yeah, so we had two instances where airplanes flew into a food processing plant, one in Idaho, the other one in the Midwest. It's rather strange that we would have all of this happening at this time. And so we had one of our writers who we assigned to, hey, we need to look into this. A lot of people are saying, hey, this smacks of some kind of conspiracy. And we said, well, that certainly has to be considered. But all of the public information that was coming out from local news stations and from local authorities at the time was that in each of these cases, they were accidental fires. And so, we're not completely satisfied with that, but we also didn't want to jump the gun like some other people were doing and claim that this was some kind of organized plot. So we have looked into that. We still don't have a definitive account on it, but Charles Scalajay has done a good job of putting together all the information that we have on that thus far. And regardless of the actual cause or whether there was any kind of organization to this odd coincidence of all of these things, still it will have an impact when you put it together with all of the other factors that we covered. This will have an impact. Every food processing plants. Several of them were large and very substantial, others smaller, and many of them niche processing plants. So we're trying to assess, okay, when you put all these together along with the many other factors that we discussed in our article, that is the restrictions on agricultural land, the paying farmers not to grow.
Okay, let's just stop there for a moment. Why are we paying farmers not to grow?
So we have probably the biggest program in which falls into that category is the conservation program, where to supposedly protect various areas, we are paying farmers not to grow on their land so that it can be designated as a wetland or a prairie land or some other area where they have arable land. And in many of these cases, they have grown on it before. But under so-called environmental concerns, which in my opinion, many of these cases do not really have a true environmental cause there. They're paying them not to grow. They're conserving this land. In other cases, they're doing it for price supports. If you hold, in order to make the prices of wheat or corn or whatever more expensive so that farmers can make more, they pay them not to grow on their lands. So there are several of these programs. It's the kind of thing that the federal government should not be involved in. I'm very sympathetic to ranchers and farmers of all types. I live in a rural area. I have a ranch of my own. But I don't believe the federal government should be doing those kinds of programs. It's always becomes counterproductive. And we see the same thing on a little bit different thing with regard to the ethanol program, where the federal government is paying corn farmers subsidies, supports, to grow corn for ethanol, and that with the ethanol, instead of using the corn for food, we're using it to make ethanol as additive for the gasoline to make the gasoline supposedly more eco-friendly. So that is turning food into fuel. And it's even now many of the greenies are turning against it, because by doing this, you're incentivizing farmers to plow up more land and plant more corn. And now the greenies are not happy about that. They're the ones that pushed the ethanol program in the first place, got so many farmers hooked on the ethanol subsidy, and now they're upset that many of these farmers are plowing up more land for more ethanol. The ethanol should be an elective thing, not a mandated thing. If people want ethanol in it, fine, and let it compete on the market with all the other fuels that we have available.
Yesterday we spoke about the 30 by 30 initiative, with the federal government taking over 30% of the land, control over 30% of the water by 2030. I mean, we're shooting ourselves in the foot. This control over water is a major factor as well.
Absolutely, and that's part of the story that we covered in The New American, and that is particularly felt here in the arid West. The Western states, it's also a big issue in the Midwest as well, but particularly in the Western states, as you move west from the Midwest, the isohyets, which dictate how much water is going to fall, go down from 36 inches and more on the east down to 10 or 12 inches out here in the Western states, or less. And so water is very important. And the farmers and ranchers that have been here multi-generations, they have water rights. And yet the government has been overriding those rights and taking away the water from the farms and ranches that produce the grains, but also the row crops, the fruits and vegetables and those things. Those come primarily from California, Oregon, Washington, but also from Arizona and other parts of the West. And they're cutting off the water to them, supposedly to protect endangered fish or endangered species. And we've covered this in quite some detail in other articles, showing that in many of these cases, it's simply not true. The farmers are not causing the problem in there. I just got off the phone with one just as we started this interview, and they're fighting for their water down there. If they all go bankrupt, folks, millions of people here in the United States are not going to have any fruit and vegetables. Not only that, the grains that make up the diets for our livestock are not going to be available either.
And
according to the World Economic Forum, we're supposed to eat bugs and change to a vegan diet anyway.
Yeah, eat bugs and go to a vegan diet. You know, in light of these lockdowns that happened, I understand that many farms have either gone bankrupt already or they're desperately hanging on at this point.
Oh, yes, that's true across the country. And that is why you've seen what they call consolidation. It's really gobbling up of a lot of the distressed farms at bargain basement prices. And that's why Bill Gates, one of the richest men on the planet, has become the largest farmland owner, 250,000 acres that he has. Ted Turner, another one of his buddies, a billionaire, like Gates, a fanatical overpopulation alarmist who says we have to drastically reduce our population. He owns over 2 million acres of American land. Now, you know, they're all big deals at the World Economic Forum. The World Economic Forum infamously came out in 2020 with their the Great Reset. And among the things, one of the most notorious things that they put out was a video, which I'm sure many of your listeners know, where they say, in 2030, you won't own anything and you'll be happy. And yet none of these guys are going to give up all the things that they own. You know, the World Economic Forum says you're not going to own a car. You're not even going to own your clothes. You're not going to own your home or anything. You don't. That's all a burden. The government will provide that for you, you know, and whatnot. But don't expect Bill Gates, Ted Turner, Klaus Schwab, or anyone to give up their yachts, their jets, their multiple mansions, their hundreds of thousands or millions of acres of land. That doesn't apply to them. That applies to you and me and the rest of the serfs.
And this is an important thing you bring out in your article that you came out last week at The New American, from food inflation to food shortages to food crisis to famine, You point out that the key leaders who provided response to the COVID pandemic, we saw how horrible that was in our response to it, they are also the key leaders of the global food security movement.
Right. And so when they talk about food security, they're talking about food control. They say we can't have food security unless we have this vertical integration concentration where the government can control the food to make sure that everybody gets some. Well, you know, that's the first step in totalitarianism. You're going to gather in all the wealth and everything for redistribution. But then the guys who are in control, they decide who gets not only the wealth, but any of the food or whatnot distributed. So you know, we have to, if we're really want to assure that we're going to be able to feed ourselves and our families, and that we're going to be able to have any kind of freedom like we have been so blessed to have here in the past, and that we really want to pass that on to our children, then we have to resist all of these efforts to concentrate and monopolize the production and distribution of food. And that's where all of these various government usurpations and grabs for power are taking us. Every dictator in history and every would-be dictator and conqueror knows that you have to control the food,
and we've already done that with the meat packing plants across the country, consolidated down to just four major entities at this point. I mean, and is that the goal, to do that with other quantities of items as well?
Oh, absolutely. So just notice in all of these programs where they say, we have to protect the public against it. So we're going to have to come in and take over all these farms here, destroy all this food. We're going to have to, you know, right now, this is the second wave. When COVID came in, many of the farms and ranches had to slaughter their herds of cattle and sheep and goats and pigs and we mentioned already the chickens and turkeys. Well, tens of millions were already destroyed in 2020 and 21 because, not from the avian flu or from the bovine encephalitis hoof and mouth, which has happened in the past, but because all of a sudden they couldn't get grain, they couldn't get their workers because their workers were deemed non-essential, or because they had tested positive for COVID, or they couldn't get their fertilizer, they couldn't get their meat to market. And so we saw huge herds and flocks destroyed then. So that wiped out many of our independent producers.
We got to take a break right here. Back in a minute on Crosstalk.
Looking back at Dwight L. Moody's life, it is tempting to focus solely on what God accomplished through a common man from Northfield, Massachusetts. Preaching to millions, starting multiple schools, spearheading the Christian publishing movement, and inspiring men and women to Christian service is difficult to ignore. Yet surely, why God used D.L. Moody is as important as how God used him. In the book, Useful to God, author James Spencer presents 8 lessons from the life of D.L. Moody with practical applications for the reader.
You'll see how he was surrendered, prayerful, studious, and more as he was consumed with a passion for lost souls. This book will challenge you to cultivate these characteristics in your own life. Useful to God is available for a donation of $17 or more to VCY America. Call 1-800-729-9829.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. We're discussing our article of our guest today, William F. Jasper. Bill has written an article on food inflation and food shortages, food crisis, and famine. The question mark, is this leading us toward famine? Discussing the issues taking place across the nation and, as he said, the perfect storm. So many of these things that are coming together, all occurring at the same time. Bill, every night on news, we're just seeing the crises of the lack of access to baby formula. How is baby formula being impacted by this? I mean, what's the connection?
Well, part of it is the ingredients, and part of it is I haven't been able to document yet, and I have a couple of different people working on this, whether there were any baby food manufacturing plants, the formula plants that were impacted by this. I don't think so. It could be that is part of it. But there are a couple of other things. You know, a lot of the baby food is made by Nestle's, and there are several other major corporations that produce it. Are they holding up production somewhere or holding up supplies of it? I don't know. We haven't been able to verify that. But it's a major thing for those mothers that can't or haven't been able to nurse. I mean, that puts you in a very terrible position if you don't have access to commercial formula. Mm-hmm. And so, babies are very vulnerable, and there are not a lot of substitutes that many babies can use for that. Mm-hmm. So that's probably one of the most dire things right now. In fact, it is the most pressing item, and some people have suggested that there might be something more sinister to this, because you see that many of the people who are leading the COVID issue and the food security issue globally are on record as being overpopulation alarmists and saying we have to reduce the people and people have to have fewer children. Bill Gates is a big example. George Soros is another. David Rockefeller, who passed away a couple of years ago, he was a big advocate of that. Ted Turner, of course. Many of these people on record, Ted Turner said we needed to reduce the human population by 95%. We have in our next upcoming issue of the New American Magazine quotes from many of these people that have been in government, people like John Holdren, who was Obama's science czar, and he said the same thing. If you reduce the population by about 95%, then you can't do a whole lot of damage to the environment. So some people have suggested that this is an attempt by the anti-natalists, those who are against children, to cut off their food. I'm not going to go that far because we can't prove it. We don't have the evidence to prove it. But that is not an out-there type of theory, because when you look at the people that have advocated this, that have publicly advocated this, some of them going back 30 or 40 years, some of them more recently, we see that they are all seem to be very simpatico with those people around the world, those dictators around the world, who are actually carrying out these kind of things. Many of your people in your audience have probably seen or heard the horrific things going on in Shanghai, where the communist government of China has locked millions of people in Shanghai. It's a city of 23, 25 million people, locked them in their homes, these high-rise apartments, and have refused to give them food. And there's people out there on their balconies screaming, we're starving, and get us through. I was on the phone just a couple of days ago with someone in Shanghai, and they were giving me firsthand account of that. And why do I bring that up? Because many of these same people, Bill Gates, who is the prime guy around the world on COVID, both in terms of finance, he's the biggest financer of WHO, the World Health Organization. He is a big financer. He is the one that started the Gavi initiative on vaccines. He is the big guy on that. He is also the big guy on global warming and food security. Well, he was inducted in 2017, we did a big article on it, into the Chinese Academy of Science and Technology, which is run by the Chinese Communist Party. He is a big buddy of Xi Jinping, the communist dictator of China. And not only him, but many of the other people in Microsoft and Google and Yahoo and all of the major big tech and big finance companies, BlackRock, Blackstone, Carlyle Group, Bridgewater, all of the big hedge funds and Wall Street firms, they're all buddy-buddy with Xi Jinping and the top leadership of China. We see that at the World Economic Forum as well. So they you haven't heard any of them speaking out against this, against what's happening in China with in Shanghai, nor did they criticize China for refusing to assist in the investigation into the Wuhan lab. Neither have they said anything about the genocide against by China against the Tibetans and against the Uyghurs and the brutal persecution of Christians. You don't see them protesting any of that. Mm-hmm. In fact, they go over to Beijing and clink champagne glasses with them. And so it is not too far out to suspect that many of these people, some of the richest men on the planet, who are seem to be in complete accord with the butchers of Beijing and have made public statements saying we need to reduce our population, it's not too far out in my mind to suspect that they would go along with policies that would cut off food to people whom they believe are superfluous, are supernumeraries that could be sacrificed.
Our phone number to Crosstalk today, 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. Your thoughts, Bill, on matters that people need to consider for themselves in this regard? I mean, there are many who go to the grocery store daily, even every couple of days, just to get groceries that last them for a couple of days. There likely needs to be some better planning for that, doesn't there?
Well, yes. Yeah. So, I mean, everybody has their different circumstances. We all have challenges, budgetary constraints, et cetera. However, we need to take an honest, hard look around and ask ourselves, particularly if we're the householder, if we're the breadwinner, if we're the man in the house, or if you're a single mom or whatnot, you have to look around and say, look, what do I have here in my house? If I have half a dozen electronic devices, such as PlayStation and all of these things, and we have several big screen TVs, and this is not extraordinary. I mean, a lot of people are in this category. We have several tablets, laptops, all of these things, and we're spending money on other non-essentials, and yet we only have a couple of days food supply in our pantry. Something's very wrong here. We're being totally irresponsible. Throughout history, you go back to biblical times, people have realized that, hey, we better save up food for hard times.
Yeah.
And so right now we have less excuse than ever because there are prepared foods that you can save, or you can get staple foods, grains, canned foods, etc., at relatively cheap cost, and water. Everybody should have at least a couple of weeks, several weeks, if not several months, of food for themselves and their family. That's the first thing that is really should be a mandatory thing in everybody's mindset right now. Is look, I we could be facing some really severe consequences. And if we each take that responsibility seriously, then not only will we and our families be better off if we have a real lockdown where you can't get to any food, but you'll be able to help your friends and neighbors and those less fortunate. But also, it's very important. People become extremely vulnerable to totalitarian control when the first order of business, their food supply, is non-existent.
Yeah. And indeed, I tell you what, we got lines that are packed with individuals here today. We're going to begin with Holly in Wisconsin. Holly, you're on the air with Bill Jaspers.
I really appreciate those last few sentiments there about people need to be prepared and saving up their food.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to just share with you, Jim, I grew up on a dairy farm, and I remember as a kid hearing about how, you know, you're seeing less and less farmers, and even more so today, you don't see anybody who's
right.
running independently. They're all owned by investors and sponsored by Quick Trip or whatever. And my husband and I were in the poultry industry. And one thing I noticed about that is, so we own the barns, but we don't own the birds. We don't own the feed, the bedding, any of that stuff. That's all done by the major companies. And they have control over everything.
Wow.
And people don't realize that they can pull out immediately. Month to month, their contract goes. But however, for us, it's year by year. So you have to do everything they say. And again, they have total control over that operation.
Wow.
So I know people get a false sense of security. They're like, well, there's still farms around and I still see them. But I've been telling people for years, I really think the way the poultry industry is and a lot of the hog industry, that's what you're going to see everywhere else. And that's what Bill Gates and all these major investors are doing to gain control.
Thank you, Holly, for that information. Interesting there, Bill, just about this aspect of control.
Absolutely. She's right on. Holly explained it very well. That is really the picture out there. Yes, there are still independent farmers, ranchers and poultry farms and whatnot, but over the last decade, in the last several years, we've seen the big corporations, pension funds, individuals like Bill Gates and others we've mentioned, gobbling up more and more of that, and that is not a good thing.
Let's go to Brian in Rochester, Minnesota. Brian, you're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for your call. I appreciate everything that's been said, and I also want to bring up, I live in Minnesota, you know, and the riots and the protests and the lockdowns and the mandates all over the country and the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's all tied in, and also, you know, in Minnesota, they're giving out checks. Who they deem essential workers now. Did you know that?
Giving out checks to those whom they deem as being essential workers?
Yeah, going back to the pandemic, like the medical workers. You can look
bonus checks. You're referring to bonus checks.
Yeah. I work.
Yeah, thank you so much for that, Brian. Diana in New Lisbon, very quickly with your question or comment.
Okay, I have a couple of issues. The first one is years ago, I'm 75, so I'll be 76 this summer. We made our own baby formula with canned milk. Polyvacel vitamins was a liquid you put in the milk,
mm-hmm.
and then water, and then you would feed that to your babies, but you had to actually make the formula yourself, and there's different,
mm-hmm.
you know, things to do it. Okay, and the other thing is my husband and I are in deer farming, and we only have 2 deer left. We had our herd up to 34, and then the CWD hit, and they tripled the cost of the licenses because they said they needed to build a lab here in Wisconsin to test for CWD. That was almost 20 years ago. We're still sending our tests to Ames, Iowa. They don't even have a lab started, so where's all that money going into their pockets? And you don't hear anything about CWD now, and it was mad cow
Thank
disease.
Thank you, Diana.
And everything.
I'm up against a break here. Back in a minute here on Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. I've spent several years researching the topic of brainwashing, literally 30 years. And I have studied, among other things, the brainwashing of the American POWs during the Korean War. What I have found by studying the research provided by our own government and the doctors that interviewed the men that came home, the communists used three-pronged approach: formal education, a formal communist education, self-criticism and criticism of America, and 3, censorship of reality and truth. All 3 of these are happening in America today. Our kids are getting a formal communist education in rows, sitting in classrooms, lined up. They're taught to criticize the free market system, their own Christian values, to consider themselves racist and haters and having white privilege. And then the censorship of reality or truth. What is real truth? The communists are doing in America what they did to our POWs in the Korean War.
William F. Jasper is our guest here today on Crosstalk, and talking about the food inflation, about the food shortages, about the food crisis. And, Bill, I know that, you know, we're scratching the surface. There's so much on this. You've got some upcoming you've got a number of articles already, some more information that's forthcoming. For those who want to obtain more information, you've got it there at The New American, correct?
TheNewAmerican.com, yes.
Great. And folks, you can find out more information there. Even when you go there, just look for this article here by William F. Jasper, and really will be an eye-opener for you. We've got Elmer calling in from Clarksburg, West Virginia. And Elmer, thank you for calling Crosstalk. You're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to enjoy your show. It's extremely informative, and I like your guest. I've heard him before. I was raised more or less on a farm, and
Elmer, let me just ask you this for the sake of time. Do you have go to either a main point or if you have a question for Bill?
Yes, yes. My wife and I have both been, we've sort of stocked back some food stuff ourselves. But the thing about the water out in the West, they want to build this pipeline to put CO2 in the ground. Why not build a pipeline across the country where they can take the water where they're having all these floods and pipe it out there to help fight the fires and supply the farmers and stuff out there?
Well, you're talking about common sense now. Bill.
That's a very good point. I mean, that is something that's doable, yet they want to spend billions of dollars pumping CO2 down into the ground. It is a totally harebrained, ridiculous, and wasteful program. The water would be a much better program.
Let's go to Dominique calling from Quantico, Wisconsin. Dominique, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I have 2 quick things. One, I do agree that it may not be accidental about this formula shortage, and I think it's very, very bad timing because a lot of vaccinated mothers have awakened to the fact that their nursing may be actually harmful to their children, their babies, and then not be able to get formula is a really bad situation. My second point was, Mr. Jasper, have you seen in your evidence and researching any proof that there really is a disease that we should be slaughtering all this meat for? I just wonder.
Okay, thank you.
Well, so we have several diseases here. The main one right now that's affecting the birds is the avian flu. It's the they have a whole bunch of different variations of it, so I'll get it wrong if I say it. But anyway, the avian flu does exist. Does it pass to humans? Most of the literature and research on it says no. Is it safe to eat birds that have avian flu? Or the eggs from them? Many experts say yes. But the main, my main concern is just as we saw with COVID, are we being given false positives, and are we unnecessarily destroying huge numbers of birds that don't need to be destroyed, particularly when you look at the impact that this is going to have on our food chain? Mm-hmm. And we haven't been able to answer those questions satisfactorily there.
We have Joel in Grinnell, Iowa. Joel, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. I really enjoy your program. This is a great show today. I had a comment and question. Comment was, what happened to being organic? Because we've become so reliant upon chemicals that I have a friend. He drilled knife anhydrous last year with $8,000. This year it was over $30,000.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the urea fertilizer comes from Ukraine. We've become too reliant on chemicals and foreign nations. And I myself am more concerned, especially because Iowa, many people don't know this, if Iowa was its own country, it would be the 3rd most food-producing country in the world.
Okay, so organic, and what's your second one, Joel?
I was just wondering, Do we know how many birds have actually died from this mysterious bird flu that everybody talks about? Because I know thousands are being slaughtered, but nobody can tell me how many have actually died. I'll take my question off the air. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you.
Well, it's a very good question. Again, it gets back to our last question. The vast majority, and we don't know how many, but the vast majority of the bird deaths have been those who have been culled or slaughtered. They haven't died from the disease. They've been deemed to be infected, and so they have been slaughtered. Now, that's in the current situation. 2 years ago, in 2020 and 2021, they weren't infected. They were just being destroyed because COVID was messing up our whole distribution system and production system. So we've had two major depopulations of our, not just of the birds, but also of our herds of beef, pork, and other meat animals. So I don't know if I got all of your questions there.
Yeah, the other one was the organic issue that he brought up.
The organic issue. Well, I'm very much in favor of organic. In a certain sense, I have my own organic gardens, and I grow all my, not all our own food, but most of our food, and our livestock, such as we have, are all organic. And so I'm in favor of that. I don't want it mandated, because on a commercial basis, particularly the way we're set up right now, we need commercial fertilizers. So I encourage people to have their own gardens. If everybody grows their own garden, even if you're in an apartment, when I lived in apartments in Los Angeles and other big cities, I had window gardens where I sprouted things and grew a lot of my own food. So it can be done just about anywhere.
Let's go to Tennessee. Merle, you're on the air.
Yeah, Jim, I just wanted to say these man-made food shortages, they are being used to squeeze us into submission and compliance. And when the reset happens, the food and gas will be rationed through digital allowances. Yeah. What they're going to do is allow us so many digits, digital credits for gas. That way they can control how much we drive. And also on the food, we'll be given so much digital allowance on that. And as far as Brandon House there, during that break, he was talking about mind control. I was reminded 6% of the CIA's budget.
I tell you what, we're out of time here, Merlin. I apologize for cutting you off, that you're changing subjects now. We have just less than 30 seconds. I address this matter of control, if you would, Bill.
Well, yes, it's very true. One of the articles in our upcoming magazine is about the control in Ethiopia, in China, and in the Ukraine, the big famines that were created there. And that's, power tends to corrupt. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. We don't want anybody to get absolute control over our food supply, because then they will be able to use forced famines upon us.
William F. Jasper, our guest here today. Bill has written an article, and you'll find it at thenewamerican.com. Other articles there as well. Bill, thanks for carving out the time for us today.
Thank you so much.
And friends, thanks for joining us on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Take Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.